This is Don Hossig with Cancer Action, New York's Cancer Action Network, loving the earth, pollution-free revolution. Joining us this morning from Florida, and I'm way up here in the Adirondack Mountains, so I'm a little, you know, wishing that I had some of the less than extremely cold temperatures that Joy Ezell has. Joy Ezell is with Hope in Taylor County, Florida. Hey, Joy, how's it going?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You were telling me about a little bit of a cold snap, but you guys, I'm sure that that is a small thing to deal with once you've been trying to create something more than, you know, something that follows hope in Taylor County, Florida. So just tell us about the origins of, that's a beautiful name, Hope. Tell us about the origins of your group. Tell us about, you know, the environment down there. What it was like when you guys only had hope for the clean water and the better life, and what it's like now, and whether things are going in your direction.
Boy, that's going to be a long story there. We first started our little group back in the late 80s. I think it was 88 or 89. I was born and raised here. I'm fifth generation from this area. And I had gone away and gone to school and lived other places and done some things like selling restricted-use pesticides for some pretty big companies, and realized that what I was doing was harming the earth and harming myself and harming everybody around me, and I decided that was the bad thing to do, so I finally quit doing all that stuff, and I had moved back home. And one of the first things my grandmother said to me when I moved back was, "You just can't drink this water now. It's got buckeye in it." And I said, What do you mean, Mama?" She said, "Well, it's got the pulp mill in it. You can smell it. You can tell it's in there." And she said, "Oh, I'm getting to where I don't drink it anymore." And I said, "Well, let me look." And I poured a glass of it out of the tap, and, yeah, you could smell the mill in it. And
wow.
I said, "Well, didn't anybody raise in hell about it?" Because I had just come off of a thing up in North Carolina where I had been working, where my company had polluted the drinking water of some farmers, and I had to deal with the situation for my company, and it sort of made me really sick with corporate America, the way that they handle things back then and still do. And I said, "Well, didn't anybody raise in hell about it?" She said, "Oh, no." She said, you can't say anything about Procter & Gamble, which is the company that owned the Buckeye Mill down here. She said, "You can't say anything bad about them." She said, "You know, they're too big." And I said, "Oh, Mama, come on." I said, "No, it doesn't work that way, Mama." I said, "People do raise hell about things like that." I said, "They don't have the right to pollute our water." And that sort of led me on a mission that I've still been on all these years. And that was, oh, I think that was like back in 82 or 83 that she said that to me.
Well,
but right before, it wasn't too very long before she passed away. But when we first got together through those years in the 80s, it was very hard for me to get information about our area and about the water pollution down here. It was before the days of computers, before you could really get much information unless you really went and dug for it. And so I started digging, and the more information I got, the more concerned I got about our situation here. I realized that the aquifer here was contaminated by the pulp mill about 15, 20 miles north of where we live. And I remember the day very well in 1986 that it dawned on me that the same toxic chemical coming out of the pulp mill was exactly the same toxic chemical that was in Agent Orange. And it just struck me. It was such a terrible day for me. I remember I was so depressed that day. I was so distraught. I didn't have anybody that I could talk to about it because nobody understood what I was talking about. It was like I was speaking some kind of foreign language, and they would just look at me like, "Well, she's finally gone off of her nut. That's that's the end for her." So, I learned, the more I realized that some of us had to do something.
Yep. Just let me jump in.
In 1989, I bought an ad. And, pardon?
Hey, Joy. Just let me jump in just for a minute here. I just want to, you know, keep the listener kind of right at the same place we are, you know. Just give me the tell me the name of the mill and where it's located.
Okay. That's where I was fixing to start right there.
Okay.
So it turned out that the local mill here, the Buckeye Cellulose, it's called Buckeye Florida Limited Partners now.
Okay.
Florida or Buckeye Technologies is what the mill is actually, the company's called, was owned by Procter & Gamble.
Okay.
And it's a pulp mill where they take in pine trees and cook them into cellulose, and they use the end product in disposable diapers like Pampers and Loves and those kind of things, sanitary napkins like the Always brand. They also use them in coffee filters, sausage casings, food additives such as in ice cream. They use this very highly refined cellulosic product in very, very many products that you use every day and you don't realize it. But the cellulose from the trees is bleached with chlorine, and in that process, dioxins are created. And as you probably already know, dioxins are the most toxic chemical ever created by man. And most of the time, they're not intentionally created. They're just sort of a chemical reaction that takes place that nobody can stop.
Exactly.
When you add chlorine onto organic matter, it just naturally forms dioxins.
Right.
And they are very, very deadly over a long period of time.
So tell me, when do you recall having first become clear-minded and focused on the dioxin as a really serious, you know, what were the steps that led to you coming to know the name of that chemical as a, you know, and to recognize it as this very serious part of the problem with, see, you know, and you had told us that the chemicals from the mill were in the drinking water. And another thing I wanted to back up on that. So this drinking water, that wasn't being taken out of the river that the wastewater discharges went into from the mill?
Well, no. When they discharge into the river, there's no way that they can take the dioxin out. It's
right.
In their effluent. And what happens is that they've had a series of sinkholes fall into their settlement ponds since they were built in the early 1970s. And those sinkholes, plus the river itself, recharge the aquifer here. What we have is an unconfined aquifer here.
Okay.
You know, in Florida, mostly what you have is a layer of sand, a layer of rock, and underneath that water. And that's exactly what we have here. In many places, there are big channels or big streams underground, but here it's more like a huge lake underneath us.
Okay.
The Floridan aquifer is very, very easily contaminated. And they built this mill in the wrong place. They should never have built it here because the groundwater is so easily contaminated.
Okay.
So they've been contaminating our drinking water here, which is the groundwater, since 1954, since they opened the mill.
Wow. And so these settling ponds, that is where the wastewater from the mill, all the chemicals that are being used to produce this product.
The settling ponds are supposed to settle out the solids and make it less toxic.
Okay.
But when you realize that they are seeping into the groundwater and leaking into the groundwater and sometimes form sinkholes, which totally contaminate the groundwater.
Yep.
Their own landfill out at the mill is contaminating the groundwater also, and God knows what all they've put in that thing for all these years.
Wow.
So we have a really bad situation
here.
And I first realized how bad it was. You know, I knew it was bad when I realized that our water smelled like the mill. And like I say, it was very hard to get information in the early 80s. But by 1986... And, of course, I had lived through the Vietnam War era, and I knew about dioxin and Agent Orange. And doing some studying, I realized that that same 2378-TCCD was exactly the same toxic chemical coming out of our pulp mill. And it was just shocking to me, and it was so depressing and so, so disturbing, because nobody else here in this whole county seemed to understand how bad it was, except those guys at the mill, of course, the environmental engineers and the, you know, the bigwigs at the mill. They knew, but of course they didn't want anybody else to know.
Exactly.
So I made it my mission to at least inform people. I thought they at least had a right to know. I thought they had a right to know that they were drinking dirty water. I thought they had a right to know that there were dioxins coming from this mill. And I thought they had a right to know that they should be able to try to protect their health in the best ways possible. So that started me on my little journey. And when we first got together, we decided we needed to come up with a name for our little group. And we looked around at each other and we said, well, the only thing we've got is hope for the future, so let's call ourselves Hope. And I said, help our polluted environment. That's perfect. And so
that's
what we started off calling ourselves. We still have members that started with us from the very first. We've had quite a few of them who have passed away that we've lost through the years. But there are still a few of us who are still together. And, of course, we've gathered up some new people all along the way that become interested in the problem and learn about it through our listservs or Facebook, or one way or another they hear about us. We've had several other environmental issues come up since then. They wanted to put a coal plant here several years ago. They've had several different, even wanted to move the bombing range from Eglin Air Force Base over here to this county in a land scan kind of a deal several years ago. And you know, that gave us an opportunity to talk to more people and meet more people and explain the situation here to them and educate people about our situation here.
Well, tell me this.
I've done a lot of things through the years. I've testified before Congress on the Clean Water Act. I've worked with Greenpeace on different occasions, different actions and different projects that we've worked on. I've worked with almost every large environmental group that there is in one way or another.
Tell people about dioxin
and tell them how dangerous it is.
Yep. How did you, you know, what were the strategies? And, you know, I'm sure some of them worked, some didn't. Tell us about your, you know, your most effective strategies. And, you know, this is amazing. You know, I never, this is a kind of a very, very cool, you know, story you're telling me, you know, your life experience here. You actually encountered this terrible situation where many, many people were being unknowingly exposed to, you know, a very dangerous cocktail of chemicals, including dioxin. So tell me, what, you know, how did you tell people about that? You know, what did you do? You know, who'd you go to? What'd you do?
Well, I just started talking to people to start off with, and then I started writing, and then when we started getting the internet, I started developing our listservs. And I would go to meetings and speak and write letters to the editor. I've done just about everything I can do, I think, to get the word out here in our community.
Well, tell me, see, like, what
and,
kind
and
of meetings?
And statewide also.
What kind of meetings did you find it was effective to go to and speak out about this?
Well, local meetings like the county commission meetings.
Okay.
Then
exactly,
you know,
what
as
we did.
Pardon?
It's exactly, we've just felt, you did it very similar when we had, you know, in various environmental problems in our, you know, area here, this upstate New York, you know, right up on the St. Lawrence River. I felt that the only way to, you know, get heard, you know, the only way to have people hear what I was saying and that our group was saying was to go to county legislature meetings and town board meetings and just talk about it, you know, just tell them that we wanted something to be done, them to use their power to start fixing this problem, even if it just meant helping us educate about it. So
that's
you know,
right. If you keep your ears open, you'll find all kinds of opportunities to go and speak. They may not like what they hear, and they may not want to hear it, but you know what I've found is that if you tell the truth and tell it honestly and openly and let them know that the reason you're telling them is because you care, that people will respect you for it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So they may not like the message, but they respect you for telling them, for giving them the information.
So has the local government become, you know, helpful on dealing with this problem? You know, What do they do?
This is a company town here. There's one company, Buckeye Technologies, the cellulose mill. They control everything in this town. It's a little company town. I can't say that we've made much progress here on the local level, except that the county commissioners frequently abstain from voting on issues now because some of them work at the mill or have family that work at the mill, that kind of thing. And they have to abstain on voting on issues now that previously they would have just gone ahead and voted on, even though they would have had a conflict of interest. I can say we've done that. I can say that we've made people aware here of our problem. Not much has been done about it, in a concrete manner. But at least people are more aware. Buckeye, Procter & Gamble did have to give free bottled water away for quite a time, which one day they just quit doing, and we never did understand exactly why they quit doing it. They said they were doing it voluntarily, that no government agency made them do it. We have had city water lines run out to people who live 2 miles north and 2 miles south of the river so that they don't have to depend on their well water. At least they have city water now.
Yep.
And I can tell you that the sale of bottled water here is very, very high. And I hate the thought of bottled water, but when that's the only clean water you can get to drink and make coffee with and tea with and such, cook with, then that's what you should do. Rather than to use polluted water, you should use bottled water. Filters, apparently filters don't help us much. Reverse osmosis filters still don't get all the toxics out of the water here.
Okay. What fraction, do you have any sense of what fraction of the people living in this area that you're describing? Is it a large fraction that are now protecting themselves and have stopped drinking this water? Or do you think that a larger fraction is just going right on all these years just drinking that water?
Well, I would say probably 50% of the people are still drinking polluted water.
Wow.
Can't afford bottled water, and they didn't get the city water lines run to that where they live. It's a shame, because there's a lot of sickness here. There's a lot of sick people here. In a population of only 19,000 people in this whole county, and it's a very large county, there are 5 home health care agencies to help take care of the sick and dying people.
Wow.
We have 3 different hospice companies that are here. There's a lot of sickness here, and I directly attribute that sickness to the toxics in the air and in the water and in the food we eat. The dioxins are going into the river, which flows to the Gulf of Mexico, and contaminating the seafood there.
Right.
We live in Florida, so all of us here we eat a lot of fish and seafood, freshwater fish and saltwater fish, shrimp, crabs, oysters. It to tell you how bad it is here, along our coastline on the Gulf, it is against the law to gather oysters because they are so contaminated. But you can still collect scallops, and scalloping is a big thing here in the summertime. People come from far and wide to go scalloping. And it amazes me that it's okay to gather scallops but not oysters because they're both bivalves. They both filter the water.
Yep.
The scallops are just as contaminated as the oysters are. But yet our government lets people continue to gather the scallops and eat them. And they say, well, they usually cook them, so that gets rid of some of it. Okay?
All right, right.
But the main thing about Exactly. The main thing about it is that the two species are regulated by 2 separate arms of the state government. So one's okay and one's not okay. Now, you explain that to me. I still don't understand it after all these years. But
well,
if you gather oysters out here on our Gulf Coast, you'll likely be caught by the Game and Fish Commission and written a ticket and fined for gathering oysters. But it's okay for you to go ahead and gather scallops.
The Department of Health that deals with the scallops?
Well, it's 2 different parts of the Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, which we also call don't expect protection.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet.
They do not look after us, okay? Your tax money is just totally being wasted, and I'm sorry to say that. And there's some very good people who work for DEP who would really like to do the right thing, and their hands are tied. They can't.
That's the way it is here in New York.
Yep, same way everywhere. And people I've talked to from all over
government.
The country, it's the same situation.
Yep, the top-down government of the federal government being totally controlled, you know, just not a chink in the armor, you know, just the federal government totally under the control of the corporations.
That's right.
And then everybody else just kind of basically following the guidance of the top of the federal government.
Well, the EPA is in existence to put things off. They're the Environmental Procrastination Agency. They're there to put things off so that the companies don't have to follow any kind of rules for 20, 30 years from now. Okay, they'll still be hassling about the same things.
That is exactly what I have just been encountering. I'm so glad you brought that up. My thing, you know, you are very concerned about dioxins from the, you know, the cellulose production facility there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very concerned about dioxins. I started being concerned about dioxins because there was a proposal to construct a municipal solid waste incinerator countywide, you know, all the trash, the whole county, big county, be burned in the township of Lisbon here on the St. Lawrence River.
Mm-hmm.
And our farm, our home farm, ended up being in the high impact area of this incinerator. And then above and beyond that, see, my dad was a veterinarian, and he knew a lot of farmers, and we were 4-H kids, and we raised cattle, and we were part of the dairy industry in that type of way up here in this very, it's the main business, you know, the largest, you know, activity is dairy farming. You know, that's the big deal here. And we opposed this incinerator proposal because of the dioxins that will be emitted and contaminating the food supply by raising cattle and producing milk in this county, this region. And then after that issue, it just another issue just came right along, this matter of people, see, when they didn't build the incinerator and they started closing all the little local landfills, then the tipping fees went up to get rid of the waste, and people didn't want to spend the money, so they were burning. Farms would burn huge piles of plastic and other trash. People would burn in these barrels in their backyards. That was such an awful experience to breathe that and learn that this was heavily contaminated with dioxins. And here was another case of where we wanted to protect the dairy industry and keep this, you know, contamination from going on because, you know, we cared about farming, and in addition, we saw the connection between the farming and the pollution and the public health. And having Dad as a veterinarian, and, you know, I just always was interested in biology and chemistry and health and public health. So this was another issue that we took up, and it was all about dioxin again. And I've been following EPA and dioxin and cancer for so long now. And the cool thing is, the longer I follow it, you know, as the years pass by when I started into it, I just keep going back and digging further back. And I just recently obtained, all of the documentation of EPA's endeavors to deal with dioxin and cancer since way back in the 1980s. And the first thing I read was a letter from Dow Chemical Company saying, this, you know, this dioxin, it's not causing very much cancer. And we don't really buy some of these studies. And the study we like is the one that was done by the U.S. federal government National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, this Fingerhut study, where this Dr. Fingerhut is kind of tearing apart what all the other researchers are saying about dioxin and cancer. It's just so disgusting. Of course, these industry people that have huge dioxin contamination problems, like your company down there in Taylor County, like the Dow Chemical Company out in Midland, Michigan, where they contaminated the Tittabawassee and the Saginaw River, and have just an astronomical amount of dioxin to clean up. So their game is to, we're going to put this off for as long as possible. Environmental Procrastination Agency. That's, you know, I never, that's a good one. I'll certainly use that in the future. we say obfuscation, you know. This is all obfuscation, you know. Pure and simple. I can't help it. I hate them. I hate them. I'm willing to say it. I hate them for knowing this science and yet being willing to go along with Dow and Monsanto.
I know,
but Monsanto's
when you think
got
about
plenty.
It, when you think about it, if you worked for those folks and you had to go into your job every day, I would be totally compromised. I would feel compromised because if I knew the truth and I didn't do the things that I knew that I should do to act upon those truths to help protect people, I would hate myself. I
yep.
would feel so compromised. And I just, you know, it makes you wonder, how do those people look at themselves in the mirror, knowing what they know, but yet not acting to protect people the way they should?
I know how they do it. I know exactly how they do it. They're not, see, there are different tribes. There are different kinds of people. Everybody's not the same. Some people are good people. Some people are
yep.
bad people. Some people are downright evil people.
Yep.
And there's a few really special good people, too. But those people that are willing to do that to other human beings,
mm-hmm.
all these years, and just sitting there knowing it, seeing that, okay, Dow comes in and says the opposite of what all the other scientists come in and say,
yep.
and that yet going along in the end, see, the way they go along with Dow, they do it in this devious way that you are pointing to, this thing of just postponing, procrastinating,
yep.
putting it off, letting it take,
putting
you know, they'll research this.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll do whatever it takes to put it off to later.
Well, for example, did you see the most recent document that EPA has produced on the dioxin reassessment?
Yep.
They did a draft
yep.
report, 1,800
oh, yes.
pages, a draft report about a
well,
draft reassessment.
How long
reassessment?
Have we been kicking this dioxin assessment around now? Since when was it, 1991?
1991. You know what? Let's do this. Let's have a party. Let's have a kick-ass revolution party in April of 2011 when this particular version of the dioxin reassessment was 20 years old.
Yes.
That would be the day
exactly.
that we dissolve US EPA.
Well, where do I sign up for the revolution? That's what I want to know. Just where do I sign up? I'm ready.
Well, let's do it. I'll tell you, this name of this radio program is very important to me. I believe that we have to have an environmental and a spiritual revolution,
mm-hmm.
a nonviolent spiritual and environmental
right.
revolution to survive, let alone have a happy, good life.
That's right.
So that's the revolution I'm talking about, and I think we need to just keep on believing. Sometimes I feel like it's just, how are we going to beat them? There's those private universities with all those people that smile all the time with all this big money that just plug themselves right into these corporations. This other tribe, this other part of our society that is so pleased, just
mm-hmm.
pleased with all the money and all the power and all these things.
Yep.
It does seem at times, like yesterday. Yesterday I was writing down the names and telephone numbers of all of these senators, U.S. senators, that are on, you know, that appropriations committee that deals with the health and human services.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at their web. I'm on their websites getting their, you know, their telephone number in Washington, and I'm looking at these people. They don't look like my tribe. They aren't my tribe. And
mm-hmm.
yet I got to deal with them. It sometimes you feel like, oh, my God, they built this so invincible. All these hundreds of years our country has existed, and they just kept building it and building it with the wealth and the power and the fortune and just all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. They have their members on every board of health, every board
oh, yeah.
of directors of a hospital.
The deck is
every
stacked. They stack the deck, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. And yep. and so how do you create a revolution in that nightmare? I truly, like that word hope, that is a powerful
mm-hmm.
word. What I come to over and over again is that these evil ones, these corporations, they lack some really important things that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We have our good intention.
Mm-hmm.
We have our love, and love is very powerful. We have our love of good things.
That's right.
We have being right. You know, being right is very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we have our spirituality. We have a lot of things that we can use to beat them.
That's
and
right.
it's very, very exciting.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
My friend Linda Young with the Clean Water Network, when I get discouraged about all these kind of things, she always reminds me, Joy, they may have more money, but we have more people.
That's the other thing, more people. There's
more
people.
That's right. There are more people on our side once they learn the truth, once they grasp how serious a problem this is, once you can explain it to them, they get it. And they realize that you are not trying to hurt them in any way. You're trying to educate them, and you're trying to help them. And they realize that those people in those corporations are only there for the money. That's all they care about. They don't care about you. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about the fish. They don't care about the water. They don't care about the air you breathe. They care about the money they're making, the profits, the bottom line.
And once you
get people to understand that, then you've gone a long way with them.
Do you, in the years you've been doing this, it's interesting. I started doing my environmental work back in the 1980s. That was when they proposed to construct that solid waste incinerator here in St. Lawrence County.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, I'm 55, and
mm-hmm.
so, you know, about half my lifetime, or nearly, you know, someplace in that ballpark, I've been doing this environmental work. And you, it's interesting that you actually started out on a more, your issue was much more compelling public health matter, you know, this actual threat that existed. You know, I was just fighting a proposal. You were dealing with this actual existent, horrible public health threat.
I tell people now, you know, what you have to do is you have to stop these kind of facilities from locating in your community, because once you get it there, your hands are going to be tied forever.
Yep.
You will face an uphill battle every day once you let a toxic, polluting facility locate in your community. You will have that problem forever, because our laws are not set up to shut those places down, nor to even really regulate them. They're there
exactly.
to give them a permit to pollute.
That's
all these state agencies and federal agencies are for, is to let them pollute. And a permit to pollute, that's what that means. It's okay for them to pollute.
It's
so you'll always have the
problem. Them.
So what we have to do is to stop them before they get started.
That's right.
That's it.
Yeah,
and
we
it's
were...
a shame, you know, the paper mills across the U.S., there was 103 paper mills in the U.S. that used chlorine. Every one of them were creating dioxins.
Right.
About half of those paper mills have closed down or moved to other countries. It's a shame that a lot of them are moving to South America, where the laws are basically the same as they are here in Taylor County, Florida. There are no laws. They can do whatever they want to do. So it's a shame that, you know, that's happening, and I hate that. What we have to do, I think, in the long run, is to change the marketing scheme. What we have to do is use less paper. And thank
right.
God, you know, I was so happy the day that the first digital camera I ever saw. I said, hallelujah, there goes Kodak and their white bleached paper.
It's wonderful.
For photographs. Well,
yeah, it's just so good.
And Buckeye here at the mill here used to make that cellulose that went into the bleached white paper for the backs of your photographs. There's, you know, there's still some sort of a market for that. But think about now, when we take a picture, we post it on Facebook, we share it with our friends through email, but we don't necessarily print it out anymore, do we?
That's right. That is
okay.
So cool.
So the market for that photographic paper is gone. The market for the film that those pictures used to be on, that celluloid film, you don't ever use that kind of film anymore, do you?
Right.
That market is gone. That cellulose for this was made here at this mill.
Hmm.
So as time is going on, we're using less and less of these cellulosic products. And so what's happening is that it's really affecting the market for these kind of products. Now they've switched somewhat. They make the cellulose that goes into pill casings. When you get a prescription and those pills come in that little gel kind of covered material.
Right.
That material is made from pine trees using chlorine, and it has dioxins in it.
So they still continue to use the chlorine
yes.
bleaching.
Exactly.
That is so horrible.
They say that they've stopped. They actually have two mills out here at this mill. They have one that uses chlorine dioxide and the other that uses chlorine. Of course, they'll tell you that they don't use chlorine anymore. And what they mean is, when they say chlorine dioxide, they act like that's not chlorine. You're supposed to believe that. So what I was doing there for a while is, whenever they would say that at a meeting, I would just show the chlorine tank cars, a picture of the chlorine tank cars going into the mill, saying, well, what's in these tank cars right here? What is that? You know, you just have to say, wait a minute, you're not telling the truth.
Right. That happens so often.
Uh-huh. Still happen. Yeah, they still get in 2 shipments a week of chlorine tank cars. So, yes, they still use chlorine at this mill, even though they have the federal government convinced that they don't.
This is outrageous. Tell me this. How does your news media respond to your, you know, efforts to uncover these things?
I'm glad you asked me that. It's very interesting. The local papers, we have 2 local papers, both of them owned by the same fellow and the same company, Perry Newspapers, and they are very much for the mill, of course, because the mill, you know, buys advertising from them. And, you know, they're very much controlled by the mill. In fact, the PR guy out at the mill generally writes a lot of the editorials and articles that are in the local paper. So the local people here, if they only read the local newspaper, they are seriously misinformed. However, we've been able to get our story, the truth, into just about every major newspaper in Florida at one time or another has carried a story about the Fenn Holloway River and our groundwater and how polluted this whole county is.
So what's the name of the river?
We've been in National Geographic magazine. We were on CNN. CNN back in the early 90s did a story called Smell of Money, and then they did another one after that called What Price White Paper, and they won major environmental awards for both of those programs. And basically the Smell of Money was the story of our problem here, how it got to be the way it is, and it was very, very good. They did a great job on it.
That is so awesome.
We were on 60 Minutes one time.
Wow. You have been much more successful with the major media entities than we have, and we'll just take hope. We'll take hope in that and just keep on slugging away and trying to get...
You have to seize the opportunity. One day, let me see, it was in 1991, I was walking through the TV room, and there was this program on CNN. Couple of announcers had gone down to New Orleans and gone out on a fishing boat, and they caught fish, and they had them tested, and guess what? They had these terrible amounts of PCBs and dioxins in them, and the storyline was, where were these toxics coming from?
Yeah.
Well, I said, okay, I can't resist this opportunity, so I walked right straight to the phone, got the phone number for CNN in Atlanta, wrote down the announcer's name, and I asked to speak to him, and I finally got him on the phone. And I said, your story wanted to know where do those dioxins come from? I can tell you. Why don't you come down here and see us?
Yeah.
And we struck up a conversation. I told him about our situation. Peter... The announcer's name was Barger, and his researcher was, I can't think of his name right now, I'll think of it in just a minute. They came down and stayed about a week and researched and went to DEP, went to EPA, they went all over the place, and then they came back and stayed 2 more weeks and they started filming, and they told our story. They did a really great job. They were excellent. Peter Bergen, you probably know him now as the guy on CNN who's the expert on Osama bin Laden.
Okay.
He's written several books about Osama bin Laden. He went to see Osama bin Laden back in the 90s. He was the researcher for the project, and he was excellent, excellent. So I got to know some really great people during all this.
Well, what we've been doing with this media thing, we have the worst media, I'm sure, you know, it's a competition, I'm sure, but, you know, I'm sure that the media we have in St. Lawrence County, you know, this is right up on the Canadian border, this is far from New York City, this is a really backward kind of place. We have the Watertown Daily Times, may their name live long in the halls of infamy, you know. It's Watertown Daily Times, they only... commerce is the top priority. Advertising dollars are only thing that matters. They will not report on pollution and cancer, even though their readers are struggling horribly with all the cancer that comes from all the pollution that comes down the St. Lawrence River in the water and that people are breathing, because we're downwind from everything, just downwind from so much of the industrial smokestacks.
The same situation all over our country. There are countless small towns, even large towns too, where the air and the water is so polluted and the local newspaper won't tell the people the truth because they're afraid to. You know, you think about it, those newspapers are just as afraid of that company as somebody who works for that company in a job that they depend on their paycheck every week just to pay the rent, pay the grocery bill, try to raise their children. They're just as indebted to those companies as they can be. And
that's
it is such a shame. It's the modern form of slavery is what it is.
That's right.
It's the company town. It's the script that they pay the poor workers. The people sell their souls to these companies. They go to work there, and they get in debt. They borrow money from the credit union. They have to keep on working there. They don't have any choice. There's no other job in town.
And yeah, we have this
modern-day slavery is what it is.
We have the Aluminum Company of America. We do have lots of these factory dairy farms now. The farms have become huge factory farms, lots of them up here. And that's, you know, a bad scene for the environment and for the people who work there and all
sure
these
is.
Various matters. But then
well,
the
and, you know,
other
the heart of the problem is that there's too many people. We have to supply too many people with food and sustenance, and you can't do it nowadays because there are so many people, except on a factory farming basis. It's just like there's too many people using too much paper, too much cellulose, too many cellulose products.
Right.
And so all this has to be done on a huge scale, and naturally when you do things on a huge scale, you're going to pollute the environment.
That's right. It's all
That's
very
the way it is.
Simple.
So our core problem is that we're trying to, there's too many people and we're using too many resources too fast and polluting every product that you see, every product in your house, every product in the stores comes from somewhere that's being polluted.
Right.
You think about that. Every time you go inside a Walgreens drugstore, look around you. Everything that's in there has polluted the town, the community that it came from.
That'd be a real story right there. You know, people should go shopping and then kind of trace back the source of what they have bought and decide whether it was worth it. If they actually
What town became polluted by this box of detergent that I'm holding in my hand? Well, the box was made from pine trees, and so that came from a paper mill somewhere. The product itself inside there, the Lord knows what all is in that, and the communities and the water and the air that they polluted to make it, the dye on the outside of the package, the dye came from somewhere, and it's polluting somebody's water or somebody's air.
And so much of it,
just,
so much of we don't even
it's
need.
It's overwhelming sometimes when you think about it that
Surely.
Way.
Yep. The fact of the matter is, like you say, too many people buying and using too much stuff, and it all being done just to make money.
That's right.
That's truly crazy when you think
and
about
it's
it. It's
promoted
like a bunch of
to, and if you think about this, you know, Procter & Gamble is the champion at this at doing this thing. They have created the impression amongst American women particularly that white is clean. So anything that's bleached white is supposed to be clean. But I'm going to tell you something. In the case of paper, bleached white is really, really dirty.
Right.
In the case of cellulosic products like Pampers and Love's diapers, white is very, very dirty. You know, what difference would it make if those baby diapers were a light tan color?
Exactly.
They're going to get pretty dirty pretty soon anyway. That's what they're for.
Right.
And if they weren't bleached white, then they would save some communities from at least some of this pollution. But companies like Procter & Gamble have promoted this in their advertising through billions of dollars in advertising. They've promoted these products so that they can keep using these toxic chemicals because they're
cheap.
That is
another element of this. That is a very important element of this. This matter of the chlorine chemistry industry and plastics too.
Now there are the devils right there. If you want to talk about some bad dudes, that's them. They are evil.
Yep. And so how many layers of this enemy do we have to deal with before we just get to that simple place where less people are buying less stuff and concern is being given to the damages that are caused by the making of money? It's just...
Yeah. Well, I'm 63 years old, I'm 63 years old, and I see that my generation, the majority of my generation is pretty much lost on the subject. But the younger people I find, say the 20-year-olds now, grasp what I'm talking about so quickly. They get it.
Cool.
And it's so refreshing to be around those young folks.
Yep.
They understand what I'm talking about. They do have enough life experience, and they have computers now. Man, they can get on the internet and look up something in a heartbeat.
Right.
They've got the means to research any of these issues. They can do it. They know how to do it. And it's so refreshing to sit and talk with them because they get what we're saying. And I think that's what we have to do. We might as well skip the 40 and 50-year-olds now. They're pretty much lost. But the younger people, the 20 to 25, 20, maybe 30-year-olds, they get it.
Well, hopefully
I think that's what we
they
have
will
to do
be great fellow revolutionaries, you know.
Pardon?
Hopefully they will be great comrade revolutionaries because we've got to have this revolution.
That's right.
These changes.
Well, and we're getting old.
Happen.
I mean, you know, I'm kind of getting tired.
Right. Yeah, and who wants to, like, miss the revolution? Who wants to just have, like, hoped for it all these years and then not get to be there and enjoy the street dancing and
I
want to
see it happen. You got it.
I want to see it happen.
I think that we've laid the groundwork. You think about people like Lois Gibbs. You know, this is the reason that Lois has formed this wonderful organization that she has.
Yep.
It's all of these things that you and I have said she went through with her group there in Niagara Falls, and she saw all of these things. She realized that she was beating her head against the wall with the local paper. She knew that she had to get bigger coverage. She knew that she had to help the local people. And all of these things that we have talked about so far are the things that have made people like Lois Gibbs, people like Linda Young with the Clean Water Network down here in Florida. I can't give enough praise to her because she has educated so many people on all these issues that we're talking about. And we all hope that we are still around to see some good come from all this work that we've done all these years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going from here? You know, what is your next, you know, what do you believe is the next small step that needs to be taken to get to the revolution?
Well, we're always on the lookout here, and particularly with our new governor that's coming in and our new cabinet down here who are total Republicans and totally for big business. And to hell with the little man. They're wanting to run in a whole new building and development and business wide open, no regulations whatsoever. We know that we are about to have our hands full and fighting off God knows what all kind of proposals are going to come down the line now. And you know what's bad is it? Is that communities that are already polluted are always targeted. Poor, small communities are always targeted for all these bad plans, whether it be another coal plant or another bombing range or another tire incinerator, whatever it is that they want to locate here, because we're already polluted.
That's right.
And obviously we don't mind because we put up with it.
And also they can just say,
we're gearing up for a whole other round of bad proposals coming our way.
Yeah, those companies would say, we're not responsible for this poison. It was here when we got here. They would love to find a spot like that.
That's
Yep.
exactly right. Well, that way they can point fingers at each other and say, no,
That's right.
they did it, not us.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want some pristine place.
Well, no. Well, they do still look for pristine places, too, because the people there don't know how lucky they are to have a pristine place. They don't realize it's better now than it used to be. Right now, we've got an issue in the county just north of us. Nestle wants to put in a bottled water plant there, or a bottled water. Take the water out of the ground and haul it to another facility not too far away that they've already got going. And I'm noticing that the people are getting up in arms about it. They are really mad. And it does my heart good to see people get really mad about something like this, that they can't take away our natural resources. Just take them away. We're
Right.
not going to let people do that. We're not going to let these companies come in and get away with it. And I love that attitude. I think this is wonderful. And I think it all stems from those little things that we've done all these years to make people aware.
Exactly.
I think
Yep.
every little thing that we've done has helped.
All of it together, say all the little things you've done, all the little things I've done, all the little
Yep.
things that, many other people, this
That's right.
that Linda Young and Lois Gibbs, and some of them bigger and some of them smaller, and just
It's
all
all
the different
adding
things that people
up.
have done. Adds up. It adds up.
It's
We have
all adding
created
up. That's right.
some change. Yep.
Thank God. Isn't that the truth? And
Well,
we
I
need
guess
more
so.
people to do it. We need more.
Yeah, I'm just
We still
always
need to educate
searching.
more people. We need to educate somebody every day. I've made it my goal to try to explain this situation to at least one person every day of my life.
Well, what I'll do is I will email you the program notice for this this program, and then you can help me distribute it around. It will be on the radioforall.net website. It will also be on. It'll be broadcast by WMRW, this all-volunteer radio station over in Vermont. It's kind of cool. It's in the Mad River Valley. What a name for a place to have our program being broadcast from, the Mad River Valley. And speaking of that, what is the name of your river? What is the name of the river?
The Fenn Holloway, Fenn Holloway, Fenn Holloway River. It's a
Okay.
very small river. It runs about 20 miles from just north of the mill. It originates in the San Pedro Bay, which is a huge inland bay, and goes to the Gulf of Mexico. And it was a spring-fed river. And now they've dried up all the springs.
Wow.
Yes. The mill
When?
uses about the at one time the mill had a permit to pump 91 million gallons of water with their wells out of the aquifer, which are all located out east of the mill, and take that water and use it in their processes, and then they dump about 68 to 70 million gallons a day back into the river. Into the settlement ponds and then into the river.
Right.
So they use an awful lot of water here. So they've dried up all of our springs. They've dried up our creeks, ponds. This used to be very, very wet country here, and they've ditched it and drained it so they could plant more pine trees. And in the processes at the mill, because they pump so much water, they've dried up this whole area. It's becoming a desert.
You
Well, they
truly have
also
a
have a
huge
biomass
problem.
plant at the mill where they've been burning waste wood, or what they call waste wood, probably a lot of other things too, to make electricity. And they say that what they're doing now is putting in a new turbine and going to produce more electricity for the mill, so they have to buy less electricity from the power companies, and they're going to be much more efficient, but what they're doing is that they're putting even more toxics into the air. These
Exactly.
biomass plants that are springing up all over the country are very, very bad for our air, because
That's right.
when you burn wood, you create dioxins, and there are no filters to filter out dioxin in the air.
Well,
So
sounds like
I'm
you've got your
hoping
work cut out for you.
everybody will rise up and say, no, you can't put a dioxin facility in our community either, because they create dioxins.
Yeah, we certainly oppose this combustion. Combustion is old. Kind of old paradigm, old school,
We have to get
bad old
away.
plant.
We have to get away from burning anything. You
That's right.
can't burn anything. We've got the sun and the wind, and you don't have to burn anything to capture the power of the sun and the wind. You don't have to burn anything to capture the power of the Gulf Stream and use it to make electricity. You don't have to burn anything for hydroelectric.
Yeah, there are other solutions.
There are many solutions besides burning something. It's wrong. It's wrong to burn. It's just plain out wrong.
And the reason it continues to be done is because the leaders are of that other tribe that only cares about making money, and that's the way they're used to making money, and they just don't want to, you know, they don't want to see anything else happen.
That's the easiest way. It's always been the easiest way.
That's right.
But there are too many people now to burn things to make power for them.
Exactly.
It's wrong to just incinerate trash because you can recycle most of that. Most of it can be recycled in one way or another, or reused, or you can do something with it.
Yep.
Well, it's wrong to just burn it because you have all those things that went into that product in the first place that polluted somebody's community to make it, and it's wrong to just burn it then to contaminate the air where you live. That's wrong.
Yeah. It's quite a lot of pollution being added on top of pollution.
That's right. Exactly.
We
should reduce and reuse and recycle and do all those R's. They're very important.
This has been a great interview, and I really appreciate it.
Donald. Thank you very much for all your work through these years.
Well,
someday somebody's going to appreciate it. You wait and see.
I love doing it. It's what I love doing. So, you know, I get my satisfaction, even though it's frustrating sometimes. I love doing it so much that when I do it, I feel the best of anything I do. So that's it's a lot just purely personal pleasure that I do the environmental activism for. It's just,
and
I love it
so
much.
You put your whole heart into it, and that shows.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Joy, and I hope.
Thank you very much.
All the best for you, and it's so wonderful to know a person like you, and to know that the people down there in Taylor County are being every day a little bit more benefited by the work that you do.
I try to educate somebody every day.
That's cool. Goodbye, Joy.
All right. Goodbye, and take care.
Yep, and I hope that you have a wonderful new year. Hopefully the 2011 will be the year of the revolution. And I'm serious. I'm going to get back.
We can make it happen.
Yep, I'm going to get back in touch with you about this, kind of this party, you know, to point to the, you know, the environmental postponement. Is that the word you used? The whatever it was that. Yep. This thing of not having a dioxin reassessment, not dealing with dioxin and cancer for all.
Really?
Because Dow.
And they've just been putting it off to buy time for the companies. That's the only reason.
Well,
they understand how serious it is. We don't have to explain how serious it is. They already know that.
Yep.
They're being paid to put it off.
Yep. They are too. They are also, in their own awful way, working away at creating pollution because they're slinging awful to revolt against, you know.
That's right.
That's simple.
Well, you know, it's not like they have a bubble around them and they're protected. They're being affected.
Well,
their children, their grandchildren are being affected, and it's on them.
Yep.
They don't have a bubble around them.
They're not. Hopefully, maybe some of them will start saying "Viva the Revolution" too. You know.
Mhm. That's right.
You never know.
That's right. That's where we need to work. We need
yep.
to educate them too.
Yep. Back to work.
All right. Take care of yourself.
You too.
All right.
Have a great
bye-bye.
Day.
All right.
Yep,
thank you. Bye bye.